This is David Duke, broadcasting to the world on Web Radio. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth. And as I always say, this program is important for all people, because the principles that we here at DavidDuke.com endorse and embrace are principles that are good for all peoples of the world, every race, every ethnic group, every nationality, every people has the right to defend their own culture, their own heritage, their own interests, and to have a government that reflects their values, their interests, the things that they want in life. Every people has a right to survive. Every people has a right not to die in wars for foreign interests or any other alien interest. We here at DavidDuke.com oppose globalism and its manifestations, which is wiping out the individuality and the uniqueness of the planet. In many ways, we can endorse some of the liberal principles of diversity and the fact that we want to see a diverse planet. We want to see our individual nations retain their cultural integrity. But at the same time, we are glad we have a world of different nationalities and different cultures and languages and music and kinds of food. We don't want to see the world remade into an image of a McDonald's or into some sort of fast food franchise. We don't want to see America certainly be remade into the image and the musical taste of Hollywood. And unfortunately, as an American, I'm ashamed of the fact that Hollywood is a representation now of what America is to the world. No wonder people don't like America. But today I have a very wonderful guest, and I've been a friend for a long time, a very beautiful and a very courageous lady. In fact, she is a lady, and her name is Lady Michelle Renouf, and she hails from Great Britain. She's of English descent, and Lady Renouf, so glad to have you with us.
I'm very proud to be here, Dr. Duke. I'm very proud to know you, and I'm very proud for people to know that I know you, because there are so many people who are trying to denigrate and discredit you, and I think this is something that we must confront and put right.
Well, you know, the more effective you are, the more our enemies, who are very ruthless, will try to denigrate you, and I know that there have been many terrible things written about you as well on the internet.
Yes, I have been. They try to denigrate me on the strength of your so-called reputation, and they try to denigrate me in this dreadful so-called biography of the Wikipedia, which is absolutely mendacious and obscene, frankly. That actually it's something of an own goal that Wikipedia have put out about me, because everything they have written about me is quite mendacious, but the latest thing since I attended the Tehran conference has become even more obscene. And
they make suggestions that they absolutely put words into your mouth. They say terrible, obscene things about...
Well, they don't even put words into the mouth. They actually claim that they are words from one's mouth when they've never had any contact with you, and you wouldn't dream of saying such repulsive things. So I think it's very important that there are such programs as these where one can straighten out what I call twist speak.
Well, it's nothing new. I mean, the Jewish extremists and supremacists have been doing this kind of thing over the ages. Of course, they felt they had a great enemy in Jesus Christ. And if you read the Talmud, you'll read about how that they alleged that Christ had, quote, sex with his donkey. That you read about all sorts of... They're supposedly punishing Christ, which just shows you their mentality, in boiling hot semen. And it's almost obscene to say the kind of quotes they had. So the personality is kind and gentle, Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. They create the person who's having fornicating with his donkey and being boiled in semen and all this unbelievably filthy material. If they can do that to Jesus Christ, I think they can do it pretty well to people like you and I, human beings.
Yes, well, frankly, it does seem to be the archetypal treatment of how to discredit. But I have noticed recently at our main, one of our main railway stations in London, where we have a statue of the Kindersport transport. These were the Jewish children who were transported, it would seem, to concentration camps. Now, there is a plaque on this statue, which is at Liverpool Street Station, which has shocked me. And it is actually quoting from the Talmud. The Schindler's List film, the Spielberg film, which many people do call Swindler's List because it has so many phony and misleading ideas in it. And here it is being quoted before our very eyes on the plaque at Liverpool Street Station, where it's saying that to save one life is to save the world. Well, actually, they're leaving out a very important word. It is that only in saving one Jewish life does one save the world. And that is the same economy of words, i.e. deceit, which we find in that film of Spielberg's, which is very misleading to the Christian and Muslim worlds. And I say psychologically Christian and Muslim worlds because one doesn't have to be a believer in either of the prophets in order to know that one is psychologically of a mindset of these religions, and therefore one is very easily duped by these false, deceiving quotes that mislead people. And there it is, right on our plaque, in our main station, where people believe that it's about all children, whereas in fact it's not about all children. Only Jewish children are supposed to be precious.
Well, that's right. The enormity of the Holocaust in our psychology, all of us, and none of us can escape it, really, because we've grown up with it. We've seen it in countless films. We've read countless articles about it, all of us. We've seen the graphic photographs, seen and heard the incredibly emotional music accompanying it. And it's an issue that it's a lie associated with evil. And it seems anytime you associate something with evil, any lie or any exaggeration or any misuse of the truth is permissible, absolutely permissible. A perfect example is one of the leading Holocaust historians is Raoul Hilberg. And in his book, he cites the confessions of Gerstein, who was a disinfection National Socialist German official who visited some of the camps. And in Gerstein's, quote, confession, he said 25 million Jews were gassed. 25 million. Now, no Holocaust revisionist and no Holocaust historian, obviously, says that number can even be remotely correct. And yet, these people, they make these kind of statements and they quote them like they're some sort of source, an official source. Obviously, the guy that was tortured and he was told to say the most horrendous things that they can make him say. And how do we know the truth of the Holocaust? You know, again, I'm not arguing here whether the Holocaust happened or not, but I am arguing about the process. And that's why this Turin conference was so vital. In fact, what happened at the conference, the way the conference was reported to the world, shows how lies about anything dealing with the Jewish problem, the Jewish question, how lies are absolutely permissible, and they're not checked, they're not substantiated, and they're repeated again and again and again and again ad infinitum. For instance, you and I were both at the presidential meeting hall, and we just sat a few feet from the president of Iran, and we heard him give a speech in which he talked about how he believed that the Israeli regime would pass. He didn't say he was going to cause it to happen. He didn't say he was going to wipe out Israel. He didn't say that he wanted to kill all the Jews. He said he believed the regime would fall, and he specifically used the analogy of the fall of the Soviet Union. Obviously, the Soviet Union didn't kill the Russians or wipe the Russians out. It freed the Russians. It was a regime change. And he spoke how he believed there would be a regime change. And as in the earlier speeches he made, I checked the internet that evening, my hotel room on the internet, and all over the world was being reported that again he said, quote, that he would wipe Israel off of the map, a complete lie. And this has been repeated thousands of times all over the world. Now, if they can lie like this about something which anybody with an Iranian English dictionary can check out, If they can lie about something so obvious and so easily proven to be false, what else can they lie about? And how many years of lies have we experienced? Do you want to talk about that experience, about his speech? And,
certainly this concept of wiping Israel off the map. Let's get the record straight here. Israel has wiped Palestine off the map, and it persecutes the Palestinians. Whereas Iran has not wiped anyone off the map, has not planned to, and indeed does not persecute its Jewish minority. Now, these are facts. The other fact that is never made very clear, because we always have this Holocaust story in the way of the truth, because the truth is that in 1896, Theodor Herzl, the founder of Zionism, as we understand it, from the concept of how they are going to achieve Israel. Of course, they had a long-term plan, but it was at the first World Zionist Congress in 1897 when he announced what he had already put in his diaries in 1896, that Israel, the metaphysical Israel, the invisible army, as he calls them, that they would actually disappear, is the word, disappear, spirit away, the entire population of Palestine. Now that is called, in a non-euphemistic way, genocide. Right. So in 1897, the World Zionism had announced its intention to genocide the entire population of Palestine, and since then it has systematically done so to this very second, whereas Iran has done no such thing at all. So we are always in this twist-speak position where what is said is, generally speaking, the reverse of the truth.
Right. Israel is ethnically cleansing every day. In fact, in the West Bank, they make life so miserable for these people. They're subject to any Palestinian subject to arrest at any time and torture in their prisons. And even the New York Times, Greenberg admitted that 6,000 Palestinians a year are tortured. I mean, that's horrendous in their prisons. They have checkpoints all the time, curfews, destructiveness. They've really made the West Bank, and they've made Gaza now just a huge concentration camp. They've routinely come in and bombed people. Children are liable to be bombed and have their children bombed in their beds as they sleep, and their babies in their cradles as they sleep. And they've made life so miserable that so many Palestinians have left. They've come to the United States. They've come to Europe. They've gone elsewhere. And this is part of the plan. And Iran hasn't started any wars in these Qasemi countries in decades and decades. Israel has been in so many wars. In fact, Iran was basically opposed to Saddam Hussein. Saddam started a war with Iran, which was on our proxy, because America, the American Jewish Zionists, wanted a war at that time with Iran, and that's when Saddam was our ally. And then when he became too powerful, because Israel then concerned itself about Saddam, who was supportive of the Palestinians, then they turned us against Iraq. Now that Iraq has gone down, they want to go back against the Iran situation. It's a constant war and constant hatred.
Well, you know, we've actually had the situation of Saddam. It's a continuation of what I'm trying to explain in twist speak. In Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, we had contrary wise, where the thing was backwards. You had the truth backwards. And then you had the courtroom scene with the Queen of Hearts, where she said, first we'll have the verdict, and then we'll hang the evidence. Now we've seen in the Saddam Hussein trial, first we'll hang the evidence mid-trial, because had that trial continued, the likelihood was that Saddam Hussein would actually expose the collusion of Zionist America and the Zionist Britain in whatever were his war crimes. So he was actually silenced. This obscene haste with which he has been murdered mid-trial is only an example of how we are kept from the truth.
Yeah, the second trial was dealing a lot with the Kurds and the supposed gassing of the Kurds.
Ah, but there would have been other things would have cropped up.
Right, and when that happened, this is the situation. America, when this went on, Saddam was our ally, and we were supporting him with weapons. And America itself, under the, again, the Zionist influence, said that these gassings had not happened. And in fact, America supplied the chemicals and the weapons. In fact, America even supplied Saddam Hussein with what do they call it? Anthrax, with live anthrax viruses from the Center of Disease Control. America, this is sworn testimony. Robert Byrd brought this out. Mm-hmm. Because at that time, it was this divide and conquer Israeli strategy. But let's go back to the conference for a moment and get back into this. You know, this conference had a great deal of criticism in the world press and by world governments. And what I noticed, first of all, about it, and there were a lot of lies about the conference as well. First, they said that there were no scholars there, just a bunch of criminals, when indeed there were many, many scholars there. And
well, they don't indicate also that many of the scholars, including chemists, well-respected chemists like Gomar Rudolf, were actually imprisoned to be sure that they would not attend such a conference. So that when I have this debate recently, I was surprised to find myself in a debate on television, on the Sahar television, the Iranian broadcasting, which actually was broadcast in America, I believe, with Dr. Norman Finkelstein. With whom I had enormous respect, because if I just may quote from Norman Finkelstein's very important research, The Holocaust Industry, he said, quote, "The field of Holocaust studies is replete with nonsense." Now, Norman Finkelstein is a Jewish historian. If not sheer fraud.
By the way, with two parents, both of his parents, survivors of the concentration camps in Nazi Germany, including Auschwitz
yes,
and others.
Yes, that's right. And then he goes on to say, given the nonsense that is turned out daily by the Holocaust industry, the wonder is that there are so few skeptics. Now, I have, end of quote. Now, I have discovered, and that's why I am often regarded as a human rights activist, simply because I am shocked that there is any question of our being silenced when we merely want to invest in normal historical research. This is what we are supposed to have had our men and women die in two world wars for.
So the conference wasn't, as you know and I know, it wasn't a Holocaust refutation conference. What it was, it was...
No, it was an even-handed debate. It was supposed to be,
right.
and people like Dr. Finkelstein said they would not go if there was no, what he calls, a bottom line. Now, in our Western civilization, in our Western culture, in an investigation, there is no bottom line because you investigate every aspect. You don't assume or presume any obviousness at all. We've seen in the old Hollywood films when somebody walks into a room where there's a dead body on the floor and they pick up the revolver, we don't assume because they're holding the revolver that they're the ones who have pulled the trigger. Now, this is an archetypal position, and that is why in our Western skepticism, which we get from the Socratic rules of the Greek Hellenism that is the basis of our culture, we don't presume anything. We investigate thoroughly. Now, our chief investigators are imprisoned. That's why they couldn't attend. However, Dr. Finkelstein says that there were no proper scientists who attended. Well, this is not true. There were scientists and scholars.
Historians and...
who
many
attended,
professors.
And the concept was that there would be both sides of the debate, which has never been allowed in the West. That's why I say that President Ahmadinejad has actually been well vindicated, because he invited both sides of the debate, because he said the free West, the free world as it's supposed to be, does not have democracy because it does not permit.
And in fact, I know that you were present as I was present, and I heard debate, for instance, between Dr. Farisan and some of the rabbis who were present about the Holocaust.
Yes, they're called the Neturei Karta rabbis. These are the anti-Zionist rabbis who believe that in the peaceful dismantling of Israel. Now, I think that Dr. Ahmadinejad also believes in the peaceful dismantling of Israel. Indeed, I believe in the peaceful dismantling of Israel, because I think that the concept of creation of Israel itself based on this Holocaust idea, which is the sacrificial... Holocaust means sacrificial burnt offering.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been misled into believing that there is some sort of magical reason why Israel has been established. And as the British veterans who served in Palestine 1945 to 45 state, that Jews going back to Israel to found a state there after 3,000 years would be like Romans coming back to Britain after 3,000 years to claim Britain for themselves. Now, this is a preposterous concept, and we simply must investigate all aspects and demand it as our normal right.
Well, I want to get some of these, the fact that there has been debate. I heard another Russian professor there who was arguing on the Holocaust and
yes.
the numbers. I heard many people both speak from the podium and from the audience debating. I heard some of the people who are revisionists debate and ask questions of some of the Holocaust mainstream people who were
yes.
there.
Oh, indeed, so there were both sides of the debate.
There was a discussion. And of course, why, even if the conference was basically about historians who have a different view of the Holocaust, what is wrong with that?
Yes.
Why is that to be so evil? These men were, nobody was recommending a Holocaust. Nobody was advocating a Holocaust. Nobody was justifying a Holocaust. They were simply arguing about what the historical view of what's called
we need to clarify here, Dr. Duke, what is meant by Holocaust denial or Holocaust deniers, because to my mind it is a propaganda term used to discredit anybody who raises any query about the narrative called the Holocaust. Now, I know of no one who claims that no hair of the head of the Jew was hurt during World War II. And that's what Holocaust denial is meant to suggest. It's meant to discredit anybody who raises the issue. Now, all I know are people who want to debunk normal war crime propaganda as opposed to the truth. There is some truth and there's war propaganda in all wars. Now, that is the normal process, and we are being denied this normal process because we have been, both sides of the debate have, and of course you're not allowed to hold a debate except for in Iran, but both sides, those who are want us to believe in the Holocaustianity, as it's called, without doubt.
Well, it's got
stories.
A whole dogma, doesn't it? A whole set of dogma, a certain number, and if you vary from that number very much, then you're like a blasphemer. You know, you're a heretic. It's got a certain thing. It has to be. There's an organized plan to do it. There's all sorts of aspects of the Holocaust. But the ironic thing is, so what if there are people that have legitimate questions about the Holocaust? Isn't the real shame is the fact that you have men and women of conscience in European countries being locked up, imprisoned for their opinions, imprisoned for their freedom of conscience and speech, things which we enshrine. We, England and France and Germany and America, routinely our leaders criticize and condemn nations that lock people in prison for dissident thought, our unpopular opinions, our historical opinions that don't jive. We have criticized Turkey tremendously because there are certain historians in Turkey that say that the Armenians were systematically killed or oppressed or hurt. And that's the other side, like we're Holocaust in reverse. And Turkey has put those people in prison for simply arguing that there was a systematic program against the Armenians by the Turkish government. But somehow in Europe and America, well, not America, you don't want to lock them up. We have other methods in America. But in Europe, we put people in prison, and there's no complaint. No, the big condemnation, that's what I was wondering. Here I am in Tehran with you and many others, and I'm reading the World Press, and they're condemning the fact that scholars were having a different point of view about the Holocaust. But they were not a word of criticism about the fact that David Irving at that time was in prison, an historian in prison for giving a speech, uttering his opinions, or that Gemma Rudolph was in prison. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the first part of a three-part interview with Lady Michelle Renouf. Please join with me again tomorrow for the next part of the interview. And I really appreciate very much that she has joined me for this fascinating discussion of the Holocaust, of the Tehran Conference, and some of the very vital issues of international Zionism, an issue that affects so greatly our world. Thanks so much for being with me. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow. This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukes.com.